the hardest pushback that we've gotten has not been from the religious, but it's actually been from the other side. And the thing of it is, we're not going to appeal to everybody. We're not trying to be everything to everybody. But for that segment of the secular community that does like to come together, and a lot of them maybe are coming out of a church background, so they miss the music and they miss the fellowship and they miss the shared values and they miss the support of raising kids together and things like that. You know, for that, we can fulfill a need.
Welcome to the Humanist Hour, the official broadcast of the American Humanist Association. In this episode, the Science Guy Lap Dance, the Sunday Assembly with and without F-bombs, and drinking before noon. All coming up on this week's episode. Welcome to the Humanist Hour. My name is Bo Bennett.
I'm Kim Ellington.
And it's good to be back. How are you, Kim?
I'm doing well, Bo. How are you?
I'm doing excellent.
It got cold here in North Carolina.
Well, that's what happens closer to the winter solstice.
Yeah, this is what's happening. This whole longest day of the year in the dark and the cold. And I just went out for a run and yeah, it's dark. I'm not real pleased with it.
It happens. But you know what? I got some good news for you. It will get lighter.
This is true. I'm going to glom onto that very much. What have you been up to?
Well, last night I got to see Bill Nye live.
Ah! Bill Nye, the Science Guy?
Bill Nye, the Science Guy. How cool is that? And not only did I see him, but I took my whole family to see him.
Oh my gosh. So this was like a private audience, right? Just you and them and him?
I wish. Like a private Bill Nye Science lap dance.
Yeah. Oh, that would be nice. I don't know about that. The idea is fun.
Just the bow tie. Nothing
just
else.
The bow tie. Oh, well, I'm so happy for you, Bo. That is so cool. What a neat experience, especially for the kids.
Yeah.
Even if they don't know it right now.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Kim, do you remember a few weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, that we interviewed Bart Campolo?
I do indeed. A wonderful interview.
Yes.
In fact, folks, if you have not listened to it, please go back. It's one of the most amazing interviews we've done.
And in fact, if you haven't listened to all of our podcasts, just go back and listen to them all because they're all amazing. They're all wonderful. But after that podcast, we received a few emails from different Sunday assemblies around the globe. And when I say around the globe, I mean within the United States. But it just sounds more important around the globe. And they were there were some mixed comments on that, but basically saying that, you know, you really need to talk to somebody who runs one of these things and let us tell you what the Sunday Assembly is about. The gentleman who contacted me was Ian Dodd. And I said, you know what, Ian, that sounds like a wonderful idea. Let's do it. So here we are. We're on the line with Ian Dodd and Amy Boyle. How are you guys?
Great.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Thank you. And thanks for sending that email and reaching out to me and kind of grabbing my neck virtually and straightening me out on this whole thing.
Don't leave an invitation like that just hanging and expect us not to take it.
Of course not. You'd be nuts not to. Before we start, I want to tell you and tell our audience why I initially had kind of a negative taste in my mouth, if you want to call it that, of the Sunday Assembly. It's because the first time I was trying to understand what it actually was, I went onto YouTube and there was a clip. And I wasn't sure if this was just a false memory, a made-up memory or what, but I did just go back and re-listen to it. And the first exposure within the first minute of this video of the gentleman who runs it out of London talking about it, he's on stage and he used the F word. He dropped the F-bomb. And I was thinking, oh, geez, you know, this isn't the kind of place I could bring my kids. And that's what I was most excited about. I was thinking, oh, this would be wonderful, you know, a nice secular place to bring my kids instead of an actual church. So is this what families could expect at Sunday assemblies around the globe?
Well, I think the clip that you saw was probably pretty early on. So the biggest thing would be that Sunday assembly was in its infancy. Mm-hmm. And I think that that everybody's learned a lot of lessons since then. I think that when Sanderson, who's a comedian, Sanderson Jones started along with Pippa Evans, this was just sort of on a lark, right? They thought, wouldn't it be cool if we did something that was like church, but we didn't mention the God parts? And they were just flabbergasted that hundreds of people showed up to it. So they kept doing them. And I think in the beginning, in London especially, it appealed to a lot of 20-somethings, you know, who'd been out partying the night before and wanted a place to like congregate the next day. But certainly There's a lot of family friendliness to be had at assemblies. and it's such a grassroots organization. Like, your Sunday assembly in LA is different than your Sunday assembly in London, and it's different than your Sunday assembly in Budapest. So there's a lot out there. And I think the grassroots nature of it means that they're going to be different from place to place. And also, like, what it becomes what the community dictates. If the community has a lot of kids in it, then that's what that Sunday assembly is going to be about. And if it doesn't, then you might see something that's a little more appropriate for grown-ups. But I think that the F-bomb was probably a bit of an anomaly. It's not something that we've ever seen, certainly.
So in other words, you'd say, hey, Bo, just because you watch one rated R movie, it doesn't mean you don't take your kids to see Disney movies, does it?
Exactly.
Especially when the Disney movies show in LA.
Yeah. All right. That makes sense. I'm going
to
write that
down. Yeah, we actually went to, I did, when in Philadelphia last year, I went to a Sunday assembly that Sanderson and Pippa had actually brought to our American Humanist Association meeting. And I don't remember any F-bombs there. It was fun and it was crazy. But yeah, it was definitely nothing I would have been upset to having my kids. Except for always look on the bright side of life.
Yeah, there's a little,
perfect line in there.
It's funny. We toss that song back and forth among assemblies. People have different ways of trading that word out with something else or plastering over it. And some of us just go, we played it and we just went for it in LA.
Absolutely.
So it's not like we gear the program towards your average 8-year-old either. Most kids are going to get bored with like a 15-minute talk on astrophysics too. Mm-hmm. But like in Los Angeles, we have a childcare program. So they do arts and crafts or Duck Duck Goose, or depending what the age group is, write letters to service people or some other activity in the room next door for most of the assembly, and just, you know, come in for a couple of the songs in the beginning. And then we have a lot of kid-friendly events outside of the assembly, you know, at the park or the movies, or go see the parade floats, or, you know, there's a lot for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I wouldn't say that every event is for every age group, because that just wouldn't work.
So, Ian, is there an outline for a Sunday assembly? Like, if, for example, if do you have something you go by that is a general outline and you follow the outline, but you could deviate from it a little bit? How exactly does it work, and what do you guys actually do on most Sundays?
We've got a framework that has been kind of tried and true through all the assemblies around the world. And it's kind of loosely modeled on what people who come out of a church background might recognize. So we start out by standing up and singing, and then we take a moment to get to know each other and get to know our neighbors. And then we, the main portion of it, if it were a church environment, it's kind of what would be the sermon, if you will, but we don't do sermons. So we invite in guest speakers on a variety of different topics to share their expertise. And so
it's kind of like a TED talk.
Yeah. So it might be an experimental psychologist. It might be an astrophysicist. It might be a paleontologist. It might be a Zen priestess to talk about meditation. And then we do something that would be really familiar to the church going crowd, which is we take up a collection, because these venues and the coffee and the chairs and things like that don't come for free. And it's not like we're going to be provided by this stuff from above. So we got to go to our community to support it.
And how often do you guys meet?
We meet once a month. Here in Los Angeles, we meet on the second Sunday of the month. There's been a lot of talk amongst our community about expanding that maybe in the next year to come. They'd love to see us put on a second program, perhaps on an alternate Sunday in a different location, just because this city is so geographically spread out that some people have to travel quite a ways to come visit us in our Hollywood location.
There are a lot of other events too throughout the month. So we look at the assembly as like the large central event amongst a lot of other events, like movie trips and trips to the park and the museum. We have like a trivia team at the pub. We have a game night going right now, a discussion group. Other assemblies have like support groups and other, they call them SMOOPs, small groups. And then we have service projects every month too. So there's the one assembly per month, and then there are a lot of events on other days. And like Ian said, rather than having doubling up or having more of the same at the same place, if we add a second location on another Sunday, we can reach out to, you know, that many more people, because we have a lot of requests for more events and more events in more places.
How many people are in your organization?
Well, go ahead, Amy. We have what, a mailing list of about, what is it, 1,300?
It's closer to 1,600 right now.
And we typically get anywhere from 150 to 180 people who come out on a Sunday morning.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, we just tabulated everything for the first year, and we had over 1,500 unique attendees. So we don't have the exact same group of people coming every month. We don't offer any kind of salvation or indulgences, and we're not very good at threatening people with damnation. So we have people who come when they can and when they're not on vacation. But there's a lot of people in the community. And then, yeah, like Ian said, we see, you know, 150 to 200 every month.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was wondering if there is some kind of secular version of hell, like some kind of threat where you can make them feel, like, incredibly guilty and that they have to come back.
Like the DMV, maybe? Or
yeah, something like that.
Secular hell.
Let's think about that.
So you said earlier, Amy, that that it's grassroots and what you get in LA is not necessarily what you get in Budapest. So what kinds of things have you seen? How do you know that you're different than others?
Part of the grassroots nature is that there's a lot of sharing of resources and best practices between assemblies. So while I really, really wish I could one day go to as many assemblies as I could, I, like I said, have baby twins at home and don't get to globetrot like that. So we have an online network where we get to talk, and there's a conference once a year. So we know that while in LA we like hard sciences, we maybe favor science speakers, that other assemblies might prefer, like, personal experience, like, just fascinating people getting up and talking about their personal stories. And I've talked to an assembly where they do mostly, like, motivational stuff, how to increase your happiness and life hacks. So everything from the speaker topics to the kinds of music some assemblies might favor to whether they focus on the help often part of our motto, live better, help often, wonder more, with service projects, or focus on the live better with, you know, just ways to support the community from within. You see a lot more. And in some places where people might be exposed to more religious privilege, I think you have assemblies that are a little more explicit about the secular nature of the community, where I know there are places in Europe where that just doesn't seem relevant, and it's really about just building community and increasing everybody's happiness. There isn't that feeling that you need a place where you have to escape to be authentic about your atheism or your, you know, secular pursuit of meaning. Yeah. So there's global differences, local differences in the global community, which I think is a feature, because I just don't think that every neighborhood needs the same kind of community or wants to live better or help often or wonder more in the same way.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Communities are very different if you're looking in the Bible Belt versus Los Angeles versus some town in England.
Exactly.
Welcome back to the Humanist Hour. My name is Bo Bennett. I'm here with Kim Ellington, and we're speaking with Mr. Ian Dodd and Ms. Amy Boyle.
Yeah, well, here in L.A., you know, we are as large as we are, partly on account of just the city that we live in. I would say that maybe one of the second most active assemblies in this country is in Nashville, Tennessee. And I think in Nashville, for a lot of the people who do attend the Sunday assembly there, it really does offer a bit of a respite from being that, you know, deeply entrenched in the Bible Belt. Whereas here in L.A., we can be much more open about our secularism. So it has a whole different flavor to it.
Yeah, Ian, I think the reason why it's so popular in Tennessee is because they probably sing some awesome kicking country music. They've got some good stuff there.
Yeah, I can't argue with you. Yeah.
So did you guys start your LA community?
Yeah.
The two of you?
We did.
Go ahead, Ian. Not just
okay,
the two of
well,
us.
Okay, well... Not just the two of us. No, there's a very active team of about 10 or 12 of us right now. The way it kind of got started was I had been leading another free thought group, kind of just a small discussion group, and I had read about this crazy conglomeration of people getting together in London fairly early on after they got started. And I was really curious how it was that they were getting, you know, 200, 250, 300 people out on a Sunday morning. And so when I heard that Sanderson Jones was going to be traveling around the States, I emailed him and said if he was going to be in Southern California, I'd love to get together just to pick his brain. And so we ended up meeting on a Saturday afternoon, and I invited a few other friends from different secular organizations, and we sat down for a beer. And after he told us how it all kind of got started in London, he looked around the table and he said, so this must be the organizing committee for the new Sunday Assembly Los Angeles. And we all kind of shook our heads. And a couple of weeks later, I invited those folks and a few others, including Amy and her husband and some others, to my house for brunch on a Sunday morning. And that was kind of the kickoff in July of last year. And we had our first assembly in November.
I got to ask you this. Did anybody ever run into your Sunday assembly and just scream like, Jesus rules, you guys suck, and run out?
Never. Not one time. And I'm kind of surprised.
maybe not those exact words, but I would imagine that there are a lot of religious fanatics who would take the opportunity, seize the opportunity to come in and tell you guys that you're all going to hell and what you really need to do is repent and so forth.
You know,
but you don't
we
see that.
We were like, my picture was on like some end times website when we were first starting and we were supposedly fulfilling some kind of prophecy for the end of times.
Yeah, of course.
So that was exciting, but not a single picket sign, not a t-shirt. Occasionally I think people do see the sign for Sunday Assembly and then and get the idea that it is a church event. Mm-hmm. And then you see this a certain look on their faces as they, you know, leave partway through. They might get the wrong idea, but no one's ever been, you know, even a little bit rude outside of the comment boards on the internet, of course, which is...
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, I would say, if anything, the hardest pushback that we've gotten has not been from the religious, but it's actually been from the other side. There's been some pretty harsh criticism about Sunday Assembly and about what we do from some of the hardcore atheist communities, especially on those comment boards on the internet. Hmm. When we first started up, you could float through a variety of atheist websites and look at the comments and see people talking about how this was the stupidest thing that had ever been done, how this was going to ruin the atheist movement, how we're just trying to turn it into another religion. It's everything that we tried to get away from when we left the church, so on and so forth.
Oh, and it'll never work because atheists don't do community, so you don't have anything in common.
It's like herding cats.
Yeah,
there was a lot of herding cats jokes. Yeah, exactly. And the thing of it is, we're not going to appeal to everybody. We're not trying to be everything to everybody. But for that segment of the secular community that does like to come together, and a lot of them maybe are coming out of a church background, so they miss the music and they miss the fellowship and they miss the shared values and they miss the support of raising kids together and things like that. You know, for that we can fulfill a need.
Well, I actually think it's a feature that that our criticism is coming from atheists, because if we were appealing to all the people who had already found, you know, kind of home in the so-called atheist movement, then we wouldn't be doing anything new or anything relevant. So we've got a lot of overlap with those folks, and that's great. But we also have people showing up who haven't found something that they wanted in the current offerings, and, you know, people who are post-religious and just haven't really applied the words atheism or agnosticism or any of that anywhere in their own lives. So I don't find it particularly concerning.
When I was talking to Bart Campolo about this, we were talking about the idea that when people leave their religion, it's really a major life change if they're used to going to church every week, if they're used to the community, if they're used to the songs. And this is like a nice way to kind of ease them into the idea that they could keep all those social interactions, but they don't need the supernatural element. And they could, they could have the best of both worlds. And it's funny, too, because my wife is one of the people who would say, like, this is crazy. You know, the whole reason I'm an atheist is because I don't have to go to church. And now what? You have this church? But, you know, she says that kind of half jokingly. She knows that there's no requirement. Now she has to go as an atheist.
Right.
And I think it's just it's sort of a reaction.
We will never come knocking on her door and ask her if she'd like to be saved.
That's good to know.
Yeah. Would you like to be saved from a Sunday morning bed?
Would you like to be saved from your Sunday brunch coming with us instead?
And of course, there's some folks, you know, get stuck with the in-laws or whatever, and they're like, yes, as a matter of fact. Yeah, we have a lot of stuff here in North Carolina. A lot of restaurants offer, and I'm sure it happens everywhere. My reference point is here. They offer discounts at restaurants after church if you bring your church bulletin in.
Oh, so, well, we have a program, so
yeah.
We have a printed program, and we have a great place that we meet right across the street from our venue where we go for sandwiches and beers.
Well, later? We meet at 11 o'clock, so it's really more of a lunch than a post-church brunch.
Right, because beer at 10 o'clock and you're an alcoholic, but beer at 11 o'clock and you're an American.
Yeah, exactly.
Time heals all.
So tell us about your venue. Where are you meeting, and is it the same place you started?
Yeah, it is. In Los Angeles, we're at the Professional Musicians Local 47 Union Hall. They have an auditorium that we're renting. And we had actually gone through a couple other places that we were just about ready to sign a contract on. But we thought we were building an event for maybe 50 people. Like, we had no idea what we were getting into. Mm. And so the RSVPs kept going up. And so as we got to like 150, we were like, no, calm down. You know, only about half these people are going to show up. And then it went up until we had like 900 people signed up for the first event. So we had to expand our venue search and find something that would hold, you know, the 400, 500 weeks we expected and that we got at that event. So it was a good find. And we're in Hollywood on Vine and Melrose, if you're local. And we've been there from the beginning.
From the very beginning. And the woman who actually, the person that we deal with when we went to look at the venue and to talk to them about possibly renting it from them, she asked what kind of a group we were. So we explained that we were kind of a church for the unchurched. And she laughed and she said, you know, I have three daughters, one who's a fundamentalist Christian, one who's a Buddhist, and one who's an atheist. My fundamentalist Christian is the biggest pain in the, well, anyway.
And she goes, and my atheist daughter,
yeah, and my atheist daughter is the sweetest person you'll ever meet, and she'll be so excited to hear about this.
That's great.
And she was.
That's great. Amy, you mentioned that there was like 900 people signed up for your first event. This kind of ties into one of the criticisms I've seen in the past, that this sounds sort of like a mega church. It's kind of like a Joel Osteen type of, but instead of Joel Osteen, we've got Ian Dodd and Amy Boyle.
Yeah, it's a cult of personality.
Yes.
Man.
How is this different? How is it not a mega church? And is it okay if it is a mega church, just a mega atheist church? Is that okay with you?
I almost wish it were a mega church, because a mega church is a church that has, what is it, at least 1,000 members each, attendees?
2,000, I think.
2,000? Yeah, so we're not that. And also, I think megachurches make a lot of money, yeah. And so we're not that. no, I think that it was pretty funny in the beginning, because all the media hype, like, you couldn't read about Sunday Assembly without seeing the word megachurch. And we're like, what is this? Like, it's not a church, and it doesn't fulfill the definition of megachurch. And we're so the opposite of that, like, cult of personality, that evangelical thing, because we don't even have... We don't have a preacher at all, and we have like a rotating pool of MCs. Like, we call them MCs because that's really, they're just introducing the speakers and maybe tying the theme together.
Right.
So it's cute that they called us that, but we're neither big enough, nor profitable enough, nor charismatic enough to deserve the title.
Nor corrupt enough.
And that's one of the questions I've seen in a few places that people are wondering about, with Pippa and Sanderson being professional comedians and definitely having a cult of personality. How do you keep that going in a situation where you don't have those loud, crazy professional personalities?
Well, here locally, like Amy was saying, we've got a kind of a rotating pool of people that have come forward and said, yeah, we'd love to help out and you know, MC a few events for you. So in fact, one of our kind of standard people that many of your listeners are probably familiar with on the internet is a sensation known as Mr. Deity. So Brian Keith Dalton, who is that character, is a big friend of Sunday Assembly Los Angeles and has emceed several of our events. But I think really it's more the draw, the kind of speakers that we get. You know, people come to hear just fascinating talks about a variety of subjects. And it's more about the meat of what we're giving them than making it a big show.
Yeah, I was actually worried about that in the beginning, because Sanderson and Pippa are so fun. Like, they're fun to be around. They're really funny. And I wondered how much of the recipe for their success was their personalities, and whether, you know, anyone in any town could really create the same thing and have it be successful.
That's a really good point. Yeah, you guys are in LA, the land of acting. I would think that you have a major advantage there.
You would think so, but we haven't been great at attracting. We haven't looked either. We didn't look for like a professional comedian to help run our show, and we didn't want the same person up there emceeing each time, because we wanted it to be about the community and the people showing up and making friends and finding, you know, other people who had questions for each other about raising their kids in a secular family, or, you know, dealing with loss or stress or whatever without a church to turn to. So maybe it's good that we weren't great at recruiting that talent, because I think it isn't about the people up on stage at all. It's about the community that's emerging and the way that they're helping each other and relying on each other.
Did you both come from religious communities in your past?
I did. I was raised Catholic, and I was an altar girl growing up. And it wasn't until I was, you know, 18 or so that I started to question all of that and break away from the church.
Ian, you?
I grew up non-religious, second generation non-believers. And as a young adult, I did my own share of exploring, thinking, oh gosh, there's got to be something more to it than just all of this. And so tried a bunch of different things, did a bunch of reading, but ultimately kind of came to the conclusion that, yeah, this is actually more than enough. And so about the same time as the quote-unquote new atheist came onto the scene, I realized that I had been that all along, and so I was kind of part of that band of like, oh, wow, there's other people like me.
So what drew you to start the community? Amy, we could stereotype and say, well, you came from the church, so that makes sense for you.
Yeah, but I said I came from a Catholic church, so there was no community there. We didn't talk to each other.
You really didn't.
You did share donuts, though, I bet.
No, no donuts.
No donut sharing? That's the only reason I went to church as a kid.
Yeah, people keep trying to cast it in this light of, oh, well, you were raised religious, so you're trying to get back to something. Like, this reminds me more of like high school theater or community organizing than it does church. Just church was a place you went and you sat by yourself and you thought about what you did wrong or what you wanted to do right. And, you know, you shook some people's hands without making eye contact and then you went home. So.
Gotcha.
So a little different than your Sunday assembly is what you're saying?
Yeah, this is about everything I could never get from church that I thought would be cool. For me, I'd come off community organizing for the presidential campaign, and I was looking for to organize something more that would be meaningful to me in a different way, you know, something that's sort of local and lasting and that didn't exist, and kind of wanted to serve that community. I know when I was losing my own faith that I didn't know any other atheists at all. So I thought that it would be neat to have something like that to turn to. And I was really impressed with what the neighborhood teams and the communities that we built when we were organizing for Obama's campaign, like the relationships that emerged from that and what people could do, you know, when they got together for something they believed in and, you know, built a community that they loved. So I was looking for local community, and everything just aligned that Sunday Assembly was happening at the right time. I just met Ian, who was also looking to expand, you know, what he was doing with the secular community, and we just sort of stumbled into this. So I turned down a job offer community organizing for another organization and thought, hey, like, I'll just see what this looks like for a little while.
You mentioned organizing campaign or for Obama. Do you guys normally get involved in politics? I know a lot of churches, well, I think they have to stay out of it because of their tax exempt status, or at least they're supposed to. What's your stance on politics?
We're also tax exempt, so we have the same onus, although that just means we can't support a particular candidate. So there are people who would say that the community service that we get involved in is political, but I wouldn't. Like, if we're going to talk about living better, we really have to get into human rights, you know, somewhat. We're helping the homeless. We're, you know, writing letters to veterans. We're sending needed supplies. So officially, the organization is not political. If you walk into a Sunday assembly in Los Angeles, you're going to notice progressive values, because I don't know how you could extricate morality from taking a position on, you know, on the environment and on feminism and on a lot of these other things. And we hope that we're creating communities where, you know, activism is more possible for those who pursue it, even though we're not directing, you know, any particular activism from our pulpit, so to speak.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we're not telling people, you know, what to think or how to vote, but I think, and I doubt if Los Angeles is different from many other Sunday assemblies, but you're going to find people, you're going to find communities where LGBT members are openly welcome, and where there's a concern about climate change, and there's concern about homelessness and racism, and, you know, obviously conversations in the wake of events in Ferguson, Missouri, and New York this fall. So those are conversations that we have at our coffee hours, and people do think about those kinds of things because they're not thinking about the hereafter. You know, they're thinking about what can we do to make the world a better place that we live in.
That being said, we don't endorse candidates or invite speakers to talk about economic policy or anything like that.
And how do you guys advertise your meeting? I think you mentioned earlier that you have flyers that you put up. Is that the extent of it, or do you do something more than that?
I'd say most of our publicity comes through online. We've got a pretty active Facebook page. We've got our own website that we invite people to weigh in on, and, you know, like all of our social events, any member who wants to put on a social event can post it on our website. So whether it's a game night or a pub trivia team or whatever it might be. And then it's just a lot of word of mouth. We get a lot of people who have come once and then they come back the second time and they've brought a couple of friends or they've brought some family members. You know, it's funny. My wife has a friend who came to check it out once for herself a couple of months ago. And then the next month she showed up with two more friends from their reading group that we didn't even know were going to come.
Sounds like word of mouth is a big part of this advertising and promotion, which is a great thing. It's obviously cheap and it works. Welcome back to the Humanist Hour. My name is Bo Bennett. I'm here with Kim Ellington, and we're speaking with Mr. Ian Dodd and Ms. Amy Boyle.
We've been pretty lucky with press, too. Like, it started with Sanderson and Pippa were just really savvy, I think, with the attention they garnered in the beginning. So that helped us a lot, like being in a big city with a lot of people who were interested. But we've had a lot of radio pieces since then, and press show up and do a little piece. So we're continuing to find a lot of people who are like, I never knew this existed. And I wish I'd known, you know, 12 months ago, which is great. But we weren't particularly savvy in courting any media, and they showed up anyway, so that was lucky for us.
Well, you got an interview on the Humanist Hour. How cool is that?
I know. We finally made it.
You made it to the big stage. Congratulations.
So if people are around and they think to themselves, well, I'm too far away from that, but this sounds good, can anybody just start a Sunday assembly?
Well, Kim, yeah. I'm happy you asked. yeah, the whole thing's set up so that anyone who wants to can start one. And at sundayassembly.com is where you would find an assembly near you if there is one and you wanted to, you know, help out in organizing one that exists, or look into starting your own. And they're starting all the time. This last September, I think, the number of assemblies worldwide doubled in one day, which was pretty cool. And there are, like, Sanderson has been hard at work creating and pooling resources to help people get started, because there's just a lot. There's a lot of wheel reinvention that you wouldn't have to do. So yeah, anyone who wants to can sign up, start an assembly. There is an accreditation process, you know, once you get started, but it's the organizing is hard, but the getting started is, there's a lot of help.
That's good.
Yeah, they've got a whole startup kit, and now that there's dozens of assemblies already in existence, some of us for over a year now, you know, it's easy for new assemblies or new organizers to reach out to those of us who have already sort of beat down the path a little bit and ask for help and mentoring.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. We actually have here in North Carolina, I don't know if there's any in other places, but there's, I live in Raleigh and Chapel Hill is about an hour away, and there's one that's starting in January.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's pretty neat. It's too far away though.
Yeah, that's, I think that's why we're going to keep seeing more, because we've got a lot of people coming from over an hour away in LA as well. I think
of course, that means two blocks, right, with traffic? Yeah.
No.
They take a cab.
Starbucks, yes.
Not on a Sunday morning. Sunday morning is the magic hour for driving.
Because everybody else is in church.
Sure.
No.
Ian or Amy, do you guys know of any research that has been done dealing with the idea of the Sunday Assembly? For example, what I'm thinking of is how many secular people would want to go to one of these events if they were in their community?
You know, I don't know what the answer is to that specific question, but in terms of the research, there is research that has been done and is being done. Phil Zuckerman, who's a professor of sociology at Pitzer College, which is here in Southern California, just recently hosted the first conference of academics that are focused on secularism and secular people. And I happened to see the list of speakers and papers that were being presented, and I recognized one of the professors, one of the academics, who was presenting a paper about Sunday Assembly. And the reason I recognized him is because I had just had an hour and a half long phone conversation with him in which he was compiling all this kind of information. So I don't know what the results of his research are, but I know that research is being done and is being published.
All right, because that would be great. That'd be some great information for this organization to have, just kind of knowing if your community could support it. Kind of like if you're going to open up a McDonald's franchise, you need to have some demographical information about the community to see if the community could actually support another McDonald's. Because you know, guarantee there's probably four of them right around the corner already.
It's funny. It's almost how they started in the beginning. I don't know whether this was intentional or not, but Sanderson put out a call for anyone who wants to, you know, create an event online at Eventbrite. And if you get at least, you know, this number of signups, then we'll travel to your town and help you kick off the first one. So the fact that it is so grassroots sort of helps with that, because if there's a town where no one's interested in starting one, well, you know, one's probably not going to get started. It's not like we're Sunday Assembly planting or something. Yeah. But if there's enough interest that people want to get together and do it, they can. And then, of course, it's pretty easy to get people to try to RSVP online before you get started to make sure that interest is really there. It's one of the things I really like about community organizing is that you don't run the risk of like making things for people that people don't want or they don't need. If we, like in Los Angeles, we want to only create community events that people want. So we ask people what they want, or we ask them to go ahead and start them through our site and we'll help support them. It's very bottom up that way, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Amy, what is your favorite part of Sunday Assembly?
You know, I would have thought it'd be the music, because I'm a sucker for some sing-along, and and that's, I think, one of the reasons that this appealed to me. But it's actually the part of the program that I like the best has been the speakers. Like, we've had some surprisingly interesting talks, considering they're speakers we can't pay them for coming, and they speak for 15 minutes. But we've had some really rich, informative talks from a lot of perspectives, which I think is great. And then, of course, you meet a lot of great people. And while we don't sit around and like talk about being secular or anything, it comes up and it's relevant. And you go to a walk on the pier and you talk about the weather and where you're going to eat next. And you start talking about, you know, someone asks you how you're going to talk to your kids about death and dying as a secular person, because it's something she's, you know, working through about her own kids right now. That's been pretty neat. Like, just have a lot more than I would have thought in common with a lot of people.
One of the misconceptions that I hear a lot is people think that atheism is just about a belief in God or non-belief in God. And what you focused on right there is death and dying. I mean, that is a huge issue that affects everybody, obviously. And it's a very important part of secularism and how you talk about things. So that could easily be one of the misconceptions that people have with the whole idea of the Sunday Assembly. What are some others?
Well, that's a really big one. People would ask, so you don't have anything in common. All you have in common is non-belief. But when you have a minority perspective, non-belief is something to have in common, because every time people get together and look for meaning, they find, you know, the same paradigm keeps coming up as paradigm of God belief. And if that isn't authentic to you, then that is something where you want to find your own people sometimes, you know, who aren't going to put that paradigm on top of your search for meaning, or you're dealing with grief, or, you know, your hope for what's going to happen tomorrow, or any of that stuff. Other misconceptions, just that idea that we're sermonizing, that we're telling people how to be atheists, which is just not, I wouldn't know how to begin. we don't have a sermon. We might talk about, you know, meditating is probably as close as we'd ever get there. We'll talk about how to reinvent yourself in the tech industry or something. That's just not any sermon I've ever heard. I heard something recently that I thought was pretty funny, that because it's similar to a church model, that we're going to drive people back into the arms of the church, which I just had to stop and sit with that for a second. I thought, if you came to a Sunday assembly and amidst all the like people talking about finding meaning in secular life, you liked the music so much that you thought, I'm going to believe in God, then maybe we're doing something really well.
I was at the Sunday assembly and I had this spiritual experience. God came to me and he grabbed my spiritual arm and pulled me to the church across the street.
Yeah, I just had to believe again. I wanted the discount from my church program at IHOP.
I'd say if the only other misconception that I can think of is some people have a sort of a visceral reaction when they find out that we do in fact pass the collection box.
Oh, they don't like that.
Yeah, because that feels so much like church to them. But it's pretty easy once you sit down and say, look, here's how much the venue costs to rent. Here's how much it costs to insure you people so that, you know, so in case you get raptured up out of your seat in the middle of the assembly or something like that. You know, here's how much it costs for the website. And when you put it in those kinds of like real hard data point terms, they go, oh yeah, well, I love what you guys are doing. And so, you know, we were concerned about like making it from 1 month to the next. But fortunately, our community has really come forward, and we've kind of got this core group of people who really do appreciate what we're doing. And so, you know, we have now people who donate regularly, monthly, either online or at the assemblies. And, you know, we're in kind of an enviable position that we can now plan several months in advance. And we've already started to line up our speakers throughout the first half of this year because we know that we've got the resources to be able to do it, because that's the way people have supported what we're doing.
So you guys said that you have MCs instead of like preachers or priests or anything. So I have to ask, does any of that money go to the MC Sexual Abuse Relief Fund?
you know, that might be a project for our third year. We're not old enough to have those kind of scandals yet.
But as of now, no scandals.
Not that we know of.
That is good to know. We'll check that off the list. So where do you guys see this movement going in, let's say, 5 years from now? Where do you see yourselves?
Well, for the global movement, I think we're just going to keep seeing more because there have been so many already, and they seem to be doing so well. And we just keep hearing from people that they'd like more Sunday assemblies in more places. Like we just had Sunday assemblies start in Germany and Belgium and France and Hungary, and I know there are a number planning to start up in the beginning of next year. So I think it'll keep growing that way. But we're also seeing other events outside of the assemblies. Like in London, they just put on this giant holiday sing-along, Yule Rock, which had, I don't have the numbers on it yet, but just an outstanding showing. So I think growth and just more of an online presence, as there are more assemblies, there'll be more ways for them to connect to one another online. And locally, like Ian said, we've been fortunate in having through the first year, we were worried about getting, you know, month to month and really just proving this model, because we didn't know if people were going to like it. Everyone told us atheists didn't do community, so we thought we might be the only ones. But into the next years, we can be a little bit more ambitious about projects and really invest in our community. So we've recently invested in childcare. We had a volunteer-run program, which was great. But now we can make sure that that we have childcare and child-friendly activities from professional childcare providers every time. We can invest in projects like community service projects that are more homegrown and kind of fine-tune what we're doing there. We've been taking video of every shooting video of every assembly, but we can start to put some of those clips. We've started to edit them, and we can put them online so that we can reach out to more people and you know, have a little bit more remote viewing options for people who are available. So so a lot of what we've been doing, but just more opportunities to connect.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, some of the things that people have asked for and that we look forward to in the coming year are a lot of the things that people have found in traditional faith communities, like marking life's milestones, marriages and, you know, baby names. We've got one of our members, one of our organizers, mm-hmm. who just recently got certified as a secular humanist celebrant. And we want to be able to offer support groups for people who might be dealing with substance abuse challenges, or just, you know, neighbor-to-neighbor care when we find out that, that people are sick or down on their luck, that kind of thing. You know, just always being able to rely on each other, but always from the perspective of, that we're all in this together.
Yeah.
That sounds wonderful. So, Kim, do you have any final questions for Amy and Ian?
I don't. I think you both just summed it up nicely, that taking care of each other and looking out for each other and being part of a community, and if that's what you're trying to do, then I don't think too many people could actually argue with that.
No, how could they? They'd be cold-hearted bastards.
Yeah,
that's what they would be.
No, I'm excited for you guys. I think this is great. I love hearing about it. We interviewed Sanderson last year.
Uh-huh.
I think it was last year. And so this is kind of cool just to see from the conceptual interview that we had with him to the actual, like, you guys actually taking control and doing it. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun.
If a year and a half ago somebody had told me that that this was gonna what was gonna come out of that beer, I would have just shook my head and said, no, that's not what I'm doing at all.
And that one day we'd be running something that people called Atheist Church.
Like, right.
Whose life is this? But it's a good time.
It is.
Well, good. Well, congratulations, you guys. It's a huge success, and you should be proud of your accomplishments. So pat yourselves on the back if you haven't done so already. So where can people find out more information about your organization? I think you mentioned SundayAssembly.org, or is it, or .com?
SundayAssembly.com.
Well, there is a .com site.
Okay.
Which is, you know, it's a central website where people can find their local assemblies pretty much anywhere in the world. If your listeners happen to be looking for us in particular, we run a separate site, which is SundayAssemblyLA.org. And then, of course, we're easily found on Facebook and Twitter, and anybody wants to reach us directly could just email us at SundayAssemblyLA@gmail.com.
All right.
And we meet the second Sunday of every month.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, thank you again for being on with us and sharing all this wonderful information. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's been a pleasure.
All right. You guys take care.
Take care.
You guys.
That was Ian Dodd and Amy Boyle from the First Assembly LA. What do you think, Kim?
I loved it. I thought they seem like they're enjoying themselves and enjoying creating community. And I think if they've got that going on for them, good. That's great.
Yeah, and I don't think the word or the term atheist church is fair, because it sounds like what they're doing is a heck of a lot more fun and exciting than church.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting. I think folks do end up going through a bit of a sine wave as they come out of church. I've seen a lot of folks, when they first get into the non-believer community, some people are angry, some people, they've been hurt, you know, they've had all these issues. But there comes to a point where everybody seems to get to a peace about it, and they want to start growing something. They want to stop fighting their past and start growing something new. And I think this sounds like a great way to do it.
Yes, it does. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for being with us on this episode of the Humanist Hour. If you do have any feedback on this episode or any other ones, we'd love to hear from you. Send an email to humanisthour@americanhumanist.org, or you could call our listener feedback line at 202-618-1371. All right, everybody, take care, and we'll see you next time on the Humanist Hour.
Thanks for listening.
Are you one of a growing community of people happily living without a God?
Huh? Do you marvel at the wonders of life, science, and the universe?
Okay, yes, it is amazing.
Do you yearn to live your one life to its fullest?
Who doesn't? Right?
Do you want to help people without the aid of him?
Amen!
I mean, yeah, sure. Whatever.
We want to tell you about the Sunday Assembly, the wildly successful atheist church from the UK.
Come on, really? Wait, seriously? Church? Really? Church?
That's right.
It's one part foot stomping show, one part atheist church, and 100% celebration of life.
But without all that religious stuff. And oh, much better songs.
Much better songs.
It's all about living better, helping often, and wondering more.
Well, yeah, that sounds all right, I guess.
How would you like to have Sunday Assembly right here in the City of Angels?
The founders are coming to America on their 40 Dates and 40 Nights roadshow.
Bringing together like-minded people and spreading enthusiasm for life and all its godless wonders.
Help bring them to Los Angeles.
But is it cool?
It's definitely cool.
And smart.
And fun.
Super fun.
Okay, I get it. After all, life is a team sport, and we're all stronger if we link arms.
Or build with Legos.
With Legos? That doesn't make any sense.
If you're ready to join Team Godless in Los Angeles, just Google Sunday Assembly Los Angeles and come get some whizziness.
Because we're united.
We're happy.
We only eat real sushi.
We are
Sunday Assembly LA.
Yeah.
All right, I'm in. Just don't expect me to dance.